We're talking about in-home care in the pandemic on The Morning Show. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. There are more than 2.4 million home care workers in the U.S. who assist elderly or disabled Americans in private residences or group homes. That's a count from a recent PHI data report. PHI is a New York-based nonprofit advocacy organization for direct care workers. There are thousands of home care agencies nationwide, and according to Home Healthcare News, most have strongly encouraged frontline workforce to get vaccinated. But what if your aid is not? Do you rely on an independent provider for home care? It's 800-642-1234. Robert Espinoza is Vice President of Policy at PHI. Robert, welcome to the Ideas Network.
Thank you. Thank you for having me.
So last month, President Biden announces vaccine requirements for nursing home staff, but home care workers not covered in that mandate. What happened there?
You know, I think what the administration was considering was the fact that turnover rates among home care workers are untenably high. They have been for years. And the concern that many home care agencies and the industry have voiced is that mandating vaccines when so many home care workers are resistant would actually push many workers out of these jobs and out of this sector. And so it would exacerbate the workforce shortage. It would make it difficult for employers to meet demand, and it would ultimately harm consumers, the older adults and people with disabilities. It's a complicated issue that, of course, can dramatically impact someone who contracts this virus.
Well, let's make sure we understand the terminology here, because when you say home care workers and direct care workers, there are also home health aides and that piece of the workforce. Can you explain the distinctions there?
Yeah, absolutely. We use the term direct care workers to define workers who support older adults and people with disabilities in a variety of long-term care settings. They do that work in private homes, in nursing homes, and in a vast range of residential care settings like assisted living. But there are separate occupations within direct care. So home health aides provide daily support with activities of daily living and instrumental activities of daily living, but they also do clinical support. So they help with some of those tasks like medication management. Personal care aides are workers who do all that daily support, but they don't do the clinical work.
Mm-hmm.
And nursing assistants work primarily in nursing homes. There is one important segment that I think is relevant here is that independent providers are usually friends or family members who are hired in states with consumer direction program as their workers. So this is a segment of the workforce that are really our friends and families that are being paid through state consumer direction programs. And that's also a significant part of this workforce.
And in your recent report, you said it's really difficult to accurately estimate the number of home care workers who are directly hired by families as independent providers. Why is that?
You know, it's part of the challenge is that states have not done a good job of creating good data systems that would allow us to, one, define and, two, track all of these workers, right? We don't have good data on different occupations within the workforce. We don't have good data that would track the number of workers or turnover and vacancy rates or a whole range of other measures that would help us better understand who these workers are and when a crisis like COVID-19 emerges, how much capacity there is in various parts of the state and the country. So it's really sourced, I think, in the challenges of data collection at the state and at the national level.
We're talking with Robert Espinoza, who's Vice President of Policy at PHI. That's a nonprofit working to improve long-term care services and support for elderly and people with disabilities. You can join in. Do you rely on an independent provider for home care? Do you know if your home care provider is vaccinated? Have you had those conversations? Are you someone with a disability that relies on an aide? Is it difficult to find quality care? Join in at 800-642-1234. Robert, who are the people being cared for, and how many Americans are in this group?
I mean, there are millions of older adults and people with disabilities throughout the country who are being supported by direct care workers. And what's interesting is that as we think about the future of this country and the aging of this country, what we will see is even larger numbers of older adults and people with disabilities. I think the latest figure on older adults is that the population will more than double from about 40 million people age 65 and older to more than 80 million. And so we're talking about millions and millions of people who need this daily support. The driving trend really is that people are living longer, right? We're seeing more older adults, but also as you live into your 80s and above, you're going to see the kinds of challenges that require paid support, ideally in the home, but also in a variety of settings. So it's a significant number of people.
So going back to President Biden announcing the mandate for companies with 100 or more employees have their employees get vaccinated, are home care workers affected by this mandate? Because President Biden did call out home health agencies to really encourage their workforce to get vaccinated.
You know, unfortunately, no. And I think that's, it's going to have its repercussions, I believe, in the next few weeks and few months. We know that at least 1.2 million home care workers are those independent providers, which are basically an agency of one. It's a family member or a friend who's hired under a consumer direction program in a specific state. Mm. What we also see is that about 91% of home care agencies have less than 100 employees. So we're talking about many agencies that simply wouldn't meet that threshold.
Yeah, yeah. You know, home health aides or home care workers, they are overwhelmingly women. They work notoriously long hours, no benefits sometimes, paid vacation, no sick leave. Are you seeing any movement on any of these fronts?
At the national level, very modest improvements. So we've seen the median wage for direct care workers in the last 10 years go up, by $12 to a little over $13. So, adjusted for inflation, we're seeing very, very modest increases in wages. I think around the country, we're seeing more and more states express interest in the direct care workforce and enact those policy reforms that bit by bit strengthen it. So we're seeing, better training requirements, stronger training programs. We're seeing states develop good action plans with policy recommendations, et cetera. But it is the case that to this day, direct care workers, they don't earn enough. They don't work enough hours to stay above poverty. And because of all of that, large percentages of these workers leave the workforce. So it is a crisis in most parts of the country.
Your new report says more than 2 in 5 home care workers live below poverty. Almost half rely on some form of public assistance. Why are wages this depressed, this inadequate?
Yeah, it's a good question. I mean, I think there are two overarching factors that, at least two, that should be considered. I mean, one is that for decades, this workforce has been comprised predominantly by women, people of color, and immigrants. And there's a long history in this country of concentrating people of color and immigrants in low-wage sectors that are ripe for exploitation, right? And we can go back to the New Deal when the programs were being debated and domestic workers were exempted from critical wage and overtime protection. So there is a history of inequity that frames that. But the other reason is that a large percentage of these workers, their jobs are covered by Medicaid. It's the primary payer, public payer of long-term care. And what we know is that oftentimes the financing isn't strong enough. Medicaid levels aren't sufficient. Employers report that the reimbursement rates they receive to deliver these services isn't sufficient. And if they're not getting enough money to deliver services, then they're not getting enough money to improve these jobs. So I think those are the two primary factors.
Yeah, you estimate 2/3 of home care revenue is through public programs like Medicaid. And we know that doctors have long battled low Medicaid reimbursement rates. And that makes me wonder, are those low payments hurting the wages of these home care workers?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, I think it's most experts' analysis that the financing and the inadequate financing and payment rates are the driving factor for why these jobs stay so low in pay. One thing to note is also that Medicaid is a hotly contested program. So it is a program that many states don't even expand and certainly don't fund well. And we're seeing at the national level a concentrated effort to reduce it, even eliminate it, right? So it's unfortunate for workers and for consumers.
We're discussing the direct care workforce and in-home care with Robert Espinoza of PHI, which is a nonprofit advocating for elder care and disability services. Are you a home care or direct care worker? What has your experience been like? Have you had to change home care providers because of their vaccination status? Share your story, your insights, 800-642-1234. Back in a minute on the Ideas Network. We're discussing the state of in-home care in these times as President Biden aims to enforce vaccination uptake for larger employers and especially the healthcare workforce. It is The Morning Show. I'm Kate Archer Kent. As COVID spread across the country, some families turned to home health to keep loved ones out of nursing homes, which were outbreak hotspots early on. According to PHI data, the direct care workforce includes 4.6 million people. You can join in as to what you have seen in the workforce. Have you talked with your home care provider about the vaccine? How did it go? 800-642-1234. Robert Espinoza is Vice President of Policy at PHI and stays with us. Robert, how would you suggest having a conversation with your home health aide about the COVID vaccine and about that tricky issue as to whether they've gotten vaccinated? Because that is a private issue.
Yeah, it's a good question. I mean, what we've heard from employers who have managed to, I think, raise those vaccination rates is that, one, it's really important to make sure that they have all of the right information. Too often workers might be getting their information from bad sources, and there's quite a big misinformation campaign that around the ineffectiveness or even the safety issues of vaccines, right? So making sure that workers have all the information. The other is making sure that workers who are vaccinated are educating and persuading their peers, their other workers. I think sometimes the best messengers are people who you trust and who work with you. And so I think those two methods are big parts of it. Of course, there's also access barriers, unfortunately, that still remain. Maybe it's, transportation issues or other issues related to access. And so making sure that you assess what are all the reasons that workers are saying that they're not taking the vaccine, because some of them may not be about just their personal resistance.
Yeah, and whether their employer or home care agencies can make sure they have the time off to get the vaccine and perhaps, mm-hmm. Covering those hours for them so that they can still, take home their paycheck. Things like that. And as you mentioned, transportation, another barrier.
Exactly. There is just a number of measures that should be explored first before adopting an employment-based vaccine mandate, because the fear, of course, is that once you enact that mandate, you might lose a certain percentage of workers.
The census expects America's population of people age 65 and older to nearly double between 2016 and 2060. What does this mean for the home care industry?
Well, it means that it will, burst with workers and with consumers. I mean, the demand for long-term care will increase significantly, and it will change really the makeup of this country and hopefully how we understand these jobs. I mean, I think my experience has been that most people we interact with, which are policymakers and journalists and employers, other industry leaders, when they express interest in improving these jobs, it's typically because they have someone in their family who has been directly affected, right?
Mm-hmm,
a
mm-hmm.
parent who's been dealing with dementia or somebody who needs support. But what they find out right away is that the system that they thought was there to protect them and provide support, it really isn't there, right? The services aren't available. They're not affordable. It's hard to find workers, much less keep them. And all of those barriers, I think, will become more and more salient for people as our country rapidly ages. So, you know, while I do think the demand on the long-term services and support system will increase, hopefully so will our visibility. I think it's also worth saying that older adults, of course, bring strengths and wisdom and experience, and we should embrace aging, I think, as a culture and all the benefits that come with it. So hopefully we'll also reimagine what it means to age in this country.
You mentioned immigrants, and immigrants making up nearly a third of the home care workforce. And I'm thinking about the crisis at the southern border. I'm thinking about asylum seekers and people trying to stay and make a life in this country. What can the home care industry tell us about the immigrant labor force and how they are treated in the U.S.?
Well, I think it's a big problem in terms of how they're treated. They are a significant part of the long-term care sector. They're also a significant part of history in terms of advances in medicine and science, right? Immigrants have been a big part of this country, and yet they're not embraced. And unfortunately, in a country that has become even more hostile towards immigrants, especially in the last 4 or 5 years, I think it's difficult for immigrants who work in this sector to feel secure in their jobs, in their lives, in their communities. What we are seeing, though, are advances and hopefully some change in that regard. We're seeing organizations at the local level develop innovative programs that support immigrants in home care, and while they're supporting them, help them navigate the immigration system, which is complicated. And we saw the U.S. Citizenship Act of 2021 introduced earlier this year, which would afford 11 million undocumented immigrants, including essential workers, a pathway to citizenship. And hopefully that measure will make it into the budget reconciliation package. But it is a really important issue that needs to be addressed.
We're talking with Robert Espinoza, who is Vice President of Policy at PHI. That's an advocacy organization for direct care workers, as we discuss in-home care and the vaccination status of caregivers and what caregivers have been through in these times. You can join in. Are you a home care or direct care worker? What has your experience been like in the pandemic? Are you someone with a disability who relies on an aide? Is it difficult for you to find quality care? Join in at 800-642-1234. You can email ideas at WPR.org. Robert, let's explore some examples of, you know, innovative local level care that, or local level support for direct care workers that you have seen working in cities or communities that might have some traction.
Yeah, I mean, there's a number of ways in which cities and towns can help address this shortage. In New York City, the city created a division of paid care, which is a division that's charged with making sure that care workers, not just home care workers, but also child care workers and housekeepers, that they have the right benefits and supports. And if there are legal violations, that there's a government entity that can investigate and hopefully address it. So there is a way in which a city can do that. We're also seeing a lot of employers develop exciting programs that are really meant to improve recruitment and retention in this workforce. So we're seeing employers develop advanced roles that offer workers an opportunity to play a more meaningful part in the care team and also elevate their compensation and their titles, and ideally also address the cost issues, right? So There are ways to create advancement opportunities at the employer level. And then I do think that public education is still relevant. I mean, I don't think the majority of the country understands the challenges that are facing these workers. In fact, many people don't even understand that Medicare doesn't cover long-term care, right? So there's a lot of misconceptions about the sector. And the more we educate people about these challenges, the more we can begin solving them.
Is there any unionization in this workforce? Are unions active at all?
Absolutely. I mean, SEIU has been a big part of organizing home care workers in the sector and nursing assistants, and also raising the bar on standards. I mean, we've seen really exciting developments in states like Washington State that have transformed the training landscape for home care workers and provided employment benefits, but also work at the national level, making sure that the kinds of wins that we're seeing right now and this year, hopefully, SEIU has been a big part of that.
You know, President Biden had pledged $400 billion in funding for home caregiving programs. That funding was ultimately excluded from the pending infrastructure bill. What would that money have done for the industry?
Well, it would have completely transformed the sector. I mean, I think there's still a possibility to do that. The number, it sounds like, will be smaller if it passes through the budget reconciliation package. But $400 billion, I think, was really a visionary overhaul of the home care sector, including improving wages for home care workers and other direct care workers. So we're hopeful and we encourage Congress to enact, you know, the budget reconciliation package and make sure that people get the care they deserve.
Robert, thank you for joining us.
Yeah, absolutely. Thank you for having me.
Robert Espinoza, Vice President of Policy at PHI. Coming up, we explore Madison's pilot program that sends mental health workers to some emergency calls instead of police officers. Stay with us. News update is next here on the Ideas Network.